Welcome to the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm your new co-host, Mike McConnell, along here with Burl Love, who's been around for a little while anyway.
A little while. Well, welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thanks for joining me.
No, thanks for joining me. So, yeah, I was telling you earlier, I can't believe on your first day of retirement from WLW. Do you like how I said that?
There are some sticklers up there who would double it. Like double mint gum. You can't say W mint. It's double mint.
That's right. But yeah, your first day of retirement from WLW, you're back behind a microphone.
I know. I must be addicted to them. But it's a beautiful day. The sun is out. Still in good voice, I say, let's go.
Let's go. Let's do this. So before our listeners freak out, I know it's not April 1, but it's still April.
It is April, yes.
April Fools, everybody, especially your former boss, DJ Hodge. I can't wait to just send him that little clip
and
ask him what he thinks about it. Because, you know, he was working all the back channels to get your replacement, you know, ink on paper, as he would say.
Right.
He had no idea that I was behind the scenes negotiating you to become the new co-host here.
Clueless.
So here we are on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Our special guest, not our co-host, is Mike McConnell, who just stepped down, ending 10 years as the morning guy on WLW, but ending, what, close to a 50-year career on radio?
It was 50 to the month.
I
started in April of 75. That was in college, but it was a paid position at WVUD at the University of Dayton. And, you lived there year round. You didn't go home in the summertime. It was a job. You had a shift. You worked it. So from the end of my sophomore year to the end of my senior year, and then they put you out to pasture. But that was the magnet that got me to UD in the first place. It really was a draw for a lot of people. Unfortunately, not a lot of people got to work there once they got to school, but it drew a lot of people from around the country who wanted to do that for a living. It was a commercial FM staffed by students. So the only one in the country. So it was a great beginning, put it that way.
So you must have known from an early age you wanted to do radio.
I did. I would go to sleep with the radio on at night, wake up whatever, 3-4 in the morning and turn it off and go back to sleep. But my sister, who's a year older than I am, a couple of years ago, she said, you're the only person I know who ended up doing what he wanted to do when he wanted to do it. Now, this is like 15 years ago. And I said, what do you mean when? She goes, when you were a kid, you always said you wanted to be on the radio from 9 to noon. And I had been for about 20 years at that point. I was like, I don't remember saying that, but it makes sense to me now that I would have liked it then.
Right.
Gave you time to go out and play in the afternoon, I guess.
Now, was that college station, were you technically a disc jockey then,
yes,
playing music?
Right.
And because I think I heard you say you were, you stumbled into talk.
Yeah, I wanted to do it, but, if you don't have a tape or you've done it in the past, nobody wants to hire you. I even looked at places as small as Utica, New York, but they said no. So it worked out great that I was at WLW in production, which meant I did commercials all day. And through the glass for me was the talk studio. Two guys staffed at Randy Michaels, Alan Gardner. As Randy became increasingly busy with the business, he would be absent, and Alan would kind of wave me in if I come in and comment on something. And over time, it fell to me, and it was an absolute blessing. I've loved every minute of it.
So speaking of commercials, I guess, even though you are retired, that WLW listeners are going to hear your voice because you have done so many commercials. I guess they're just going to continue on until they're re-recorded.
Well, some will, and some will stick with me, and I'll just keep doing them even.
Okay. Well, that was going to kind of, that's kind of what it led into that. So define retirement at this point. So you might still do some voice work for commercials?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, the number of people who said, you're going to do a podcast? No, I'm not doing a podcast. So, if you have a client that's been with you for a long time and they would like to continue, I'm happy to do that. I can do that from home, and mail it in, literally email it in.
Now, your morning show was probably hard to do from home because of all the moving parts.
Yeah, I like being there and seeing the people. But since I had the studio at home for a long time, I would work from home on Friday. Now, the first time I did it, it seemed like my weekend was a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So I like that. So for a few years, on Friday I would work from home, but you wouldn't know the difference.
Right.
But I like seeing the people at work and interacting with them. A lot of eye contact when you can. I think helps the program along.
to be with people in the studio.
Preferably.
I hear the camaraderie. You know, I'm a radio listener, a Cincinnati radio listener. Like, my mother always had the radio on. She'd switch back and forth between 55 KRC, because they did morning talk, Jerry Thomas.
Yep.
And then switched to WLW. Was that Rich King maybe back in that era?
Rich was still a KRC.
KRC.
He was at KRC.
Okay.
He was funny, too.
Yes. They were entertaining. And you felt like you knew these people because you heard their voices all the time. But she would also dial in to win stuff. Like, that was her thing. Yeah. So I have this in my background, like enjoying radio, getting to know the people. And I have to tell you, when I moved back to Cincinnati in 2018, actually end of 2017, and was reconnecting, trying to catch up because, you know, the job I have, you got to know what's going on in town, right? And so I had this 12-year knowledge gap. So one of the things I did religiously was listen to your show in the morning just to get caught up on all the issues. And you didn't know this, but you were part of the welcome wagon for me, you know, that familiar voice. I'd heard you before. Lots had changed. But you have been sort of like an anchor, but you did have a time where you tested the waters of another big market. You were in Chicago.
Yeah. Something in the back of my mind. I wanted to work there for a long time. I remember when
it is sort of a destination. If this is your want in life to do radio in what was WLS, right?
WGN.
WGN, even bigger.
Yeah. So we had the Cubs and Blackhawks and all that.
Yeah.
And something, my daughter was little. I had an unemployment stretch of about 6 months, and I took care of her. She was like one. And with the TV on, we watched the Cubs every day, and they were on WGN TV.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about it, and I said, you know, you'd get a lot of time off for Cubs games if you worked at WGN Radio. And I did a little bit. I mean, I worked 9 to noon, but they stretched it till 1, and there'd be day games where, you know, shortened the show a little bit.
Right.
But it was fun for a while. It's difficult, as you said, to come back to town. You came back to town, but at least you had the foundation. You knew the streets. You knew basically the government. You knew the neighborhoods. You knew those things. Going to a city you don't have any background in, and there are a lot of well-known people you know nothing about, and you try to get as much background on them as you can to get yourself up to speed. My line has always been, it's a lot easier to live it than it is to learn it, because it's difficult. And even just pronunciations of neighborhoods and things like that, people come down on you if you mispronounce their neighborhood.
No, I relate to that. My first opportunity to be an editor-in-chief, I was at the Cincinnati Enquirer, but you seldom get that opportunity in the newsroom that you're working in. So you got to be willing to go somewhere, smaller market usually. Right. So I end up in Reno, Nevada. And talk about pronouncing things correctly. I'm from the Midwest, so I was saying Nevada.
Yeah,
and boy, did I stick out. Like, they were ready to run me out of town until I got that, you know, straight in my mind. But you're right. It took me a while to figure out, you know, who are the people behind the scenes making things happen, who you should know, who are the authorities on different topics. Eventually, you get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed my time in Reno a lot. It was near Lake Tahoe.
It's pretty out there. I was there once.
It's
beautiful.
Gorgeous. When I left to go to DC, people were like, you know, how can you go back east? Like, once you're out west, it seems like that's the achievement, right? Like, how can you go back east? Did you get any pushback when you said, I'm leaving Chicago to go to Ohio? Or people who were scratching their heads?
It's interesting, but Cincinnati doesn't have a bad image in Chicago. I think a lot of people from Chicago go to Miami.
Okay.
And it brings a little bit of Cincinnati back there. So they don't really view it.
Miami University.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think people in Chicago view Cincinnati as the backwater that some Cincinnatians think they view it to be. Which is one thing about Cincinnati that always kind of surprised me. You know, I think people think of us as a small town and those are the big boys, and we're not. But this city is just, it's the right size. People care here. You know, they feel like they can do something about it if they don't like it. I mean, I grew up outside Philadelphia, so I knew those politics. And then Chicago, a lot of people just shrug. What are you going to do at City Hall? Yeah, what are you going to do at City? Nothing you can do. People here don't feel that way. They feel there's something they can do, and they want a quality of life, and they feel that they can impact their government into action to improve things. And I think that's healthy. You don't want to be so big that goes away.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people want to come back. Mm-hmm. We're known as a boomerang city, you know.
Yeah.
Especially kids that grow up here, they're like, "Oh, I got to get out." And as soon as it's time to like settle down, buy a house, start a family, they're like, "I don't think Cincinnati was so bad after all."
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, you have tie-ups at the Brent Spence Bridge. Try other cities. I mean,
So I was in D.C. 6 years, and when I came back and people were complaining about traffic, yeah. I'm like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they do.
It's all relative, but.
Yep.
It took me 4 hours to get through Atlanta a few weeks ago. I mean, it's just ridiculous, the number of cars and people, and we do have it relatively easy. I came down here today about 10 o'clock. I left the house, and I know it's the exception, but there was not a slowdown on 75 from up around Tri-County all the way to downtown.
Yeah, Monday's a good day.
And I got the very first parking space when I got downtown.
That's your well, there are fewer parking spaces here now because half of them are covered with water.
Yeah.
Where everybody likes to park between the stadiums and under. Like I was pointing out to you, people were kayaking. So, but yes, not a lot of people down here today. I'm surprised we don't have people, you know, flood watchers. Well, they're looking at all Phil's photos and the photo staff's photos. So you said you're from Philadelphia. You ended up in Ohio because you went to UD. Is that what brought you to Ohio?
Right. Yes.
And other than your stint in Chicago, you never left.
Briefly to Miami, but okay. didn't like it.
Not your vibe.
I only stayed a few months. I mean, the weather was fine, but it was just at the time, might still be very violent.
So when you broke into the business, you started as a producer.
In talk, yes.
In talk. How was your big break, just your first, when you got your first paycheck, not at the college stage, but when you got your first paycheck, what were you doing?
Well, the college station, we actually won. We were beating our competition, which was WTUE across town. And that continued until they hired us.
Were they classic rock back then still?
Yeah.
Or rock?
Rock at the
now
time.
Now it's classic.
Right.
They've held to the format, so now it's classic rock.
Exactly. Yeah. So they hired some of us, and then they did quite well. So did well, TUE stayed there for about 4 years. And then to 96 Rock, which at the time was WW's FM, that's where I met the WW people and Randy Michaels and all those.
Yeah.
And decided from there to try the stint in Miami. But it was just, I mean, every day, just body found in canal, body found in garbage can, body found all over the place. I mean, do I really want to move my family down here? My daughter was one. You know, is this a place to raise a family? And I decided it really wasn't. So I made plans to go back. I didn't have a contract. And talked to Randy at a party. And a gentleman's name is Bill Gable, who was going to leave town. I said, I'll take that job. And he said, sure. So that's where it all kind of came together at LW. And, you know, couldn't be happier. It's a great place to work.
Was it, who owned the station back then when you started?
Was it Avco? We went through a lot.
So this is after the J-Corps era.
Yeah, it was J-Corps by the time I got there.
Okay.
I kind of remember it coming together though. J-Corps, then Clear Channel, iHeart. There've been, you know, a few changes over the years.
Right.
It was more fun back. I mean, I probably like your business too. When you used to have a lot of people in the business, in the building.
Yeah.
You know, but it tapers off over time. And I'll bet we've had like 250 people working there. I mean, multiple radio stations.
Right.
I'll bet we had 250, and maybe today it's around 40.
Yeah.
You know, it really changes over time.
When I walked into the Enquirer, and I had worked right after college at a small paper in Michigan, but got to come back home. So I came back twice. There must be something wrong with
magnetic.
Me. But there were 200 people in the newsroom. 200. We have about 75 right now.
Yeah.
And back then, we weren't doing 24/7 digital news. We were doing one news. Well, we had six editions, but basically, it was all focused on that one product, the next morning's paper. So we still do that. But yeah, it's changed a lot. What were some of the changes that that you weathered that made the job less fun?
Oh. it didn't really impact me. It impacted the people around me. You were just surprised. You know, a few months would go by and here's another Friday and they're walking four more people out the door. And it's like, I thought we needed them.
Yeah. You know, the downside.
A couple months later, there goes four more people out the door. And it just, it was a regular thing. It was, you know, kind of dispiriting and you miss people. It never really impacted me. When I went to Chicago, it was the company, they tried something different where you always just dealt with your immediate supervisor when it came to renewing a contract or whatever. And they decided to try something different. They flew a corporate attorney in and we were going to deal with this corporate attorney. And at the time it was known that I had this job offer on the table. And of course you have a base salary and then you have bonuses and you have endorsements and other ways, areas of income. Well, he decided to cut those two and said no raises for 3 years. And I said, and you know, I have an attractive offer on the table. And he just said, yes. I took that as a cue that I should probably take the other one. So that's really why I went, was that guy. And they stopped doing it after that. You went back to dealing with your boss.
Yeah. Yeah. So. One of the things that you were talking about on Friday, which I listened to most of your final day behind the microphone, which was a lot of fun. A lot of people that I remember over the years, you know, working at WLW. Of course, you had Eddie Fingers there, who I grew up listening to on WEBN with the Dawn Patrol. So I feel like I've aged with Eddie, because when he was doing the Dawn Patrol, I had just gotten into the business. And one of the things I was doing was like this targeted publication for younger readers. Mm-hmm. So it was a little edgier, a little more fun, you know, built around entertainment and music. And then I come back to town and Eddie's doing serious talk radio.
He's not that serious.
No, they're not that serious.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of people that you have worked with over the years that are, like yourself, if you're a radio listener, household names. It sounds like you guys have had a lot of fun, too.
Absolutely.
Lifelong friends.
Yeah. Yeah, Eddie and I go back to college days.
So, adventures, misadventures.
Yeah, I mean, we've vacationed, we've palled around. I mean, as I mentioned on the program on Friday, my daughter sees him as an uncle, and his kids see me as an uncle. We've been around for their kids' lives the whole time. So, I started to tell this story and realized I couldn't in the middle of it on Friday, and that was...
Well, we don't have FCC...
It wasn't
here.
Like that. It was the fact that my grandkids were in the room, and I forgot they were in the room.
And your daughter, right?
Right. Well, my daughter was about five. Eddie came over at Christmas, and he goes, Santa left this at my house for you. You still believe in Santa, don't you? He said that to a five-year-old. And I looked at him like, what did you just say? So I absentmindedly started to tell that story Friday. Then I saw my two grandkids five and seven were sitting there.
Right.
He said, if I'd have told that story, it would have vindicated him 40 years after the event.
Yep.
So
that is funny. So was there ever a time where you said something on the radio that got you in trouble with your bosses?
No, but my boss said something that got me in trouble, got me sued. At one point that we had a guy from KRC, Alan Browning, was supposed to come to work at LW.
Oh, yeah.
And at the last minute, he backed out even though we had a contract.
I remember that, yeah.
And it did not sit well with Randy.
Okay.
And I guess Alan Browning's wife was his producer. And I forget how this came up, but Randy had walked into the studio at a point in time where just anybody could stop in and comment or something. And he made some reference to his wife and something like, you know, I don't want to say she's an airhead, but there's a nozzle on the back of her head where the helium goes in.
Or
something
that on
like,
the air?
Yes. But on my show.
Oh, okay. Well.
So since it was my show, I got sued for $3 million. It's, you know, never made it to court.
Yeah.
But it looked like it was going to get in the way of the closing on my new house.
Oh, boy.
The people I was buying from had read it and they were, is this going to work or not? So there were mild ramifications, but... No, I've never said anything I don't believe that got me in trouble with my boss.
Well, that's pretty remarkable for a 50-year radio career.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, Lord knows, in this town alone, there have been moments.
Right. Yeah. But if you kind of know the
line. Or guests, you know, like, you know, the infamous Bob Huggins, you know. live via cell phone into the microphone on Willie's show.
Well, blame that on the people who designed the studio.
Right.
Typically, in a radio studio, when the mics go on, it turns off speakers because you'd have feedback. But there's usually a little one that everybody in the room can hear
right.
what the caller is saying. They never put one. They still don't have one in there. So if you're in the room and, you know, say Willie's talking to somebody, you can't hear what they're saying. So he would use his phone and hold it up to the mic. But if during the stooge report, other people are making noise too. I don't think everybody heard exactly what he said, or it wouldn't have gone on the air. So he got in trouble.
Yeah, that was something. Now, when you switched to the mornings,
yes.
that had to be a lifestyle change, because what time typically to be on the air at 5? When are you in the shower?
I get up at 3:20. I showered for the first month and decided
was it worth it?
Do it afterwards, you know.
Save some time.
Yeah.
Valuable sleep time.
Absolutely. So it's just, my hair tends to be kind of pillowed up in the morning. I dump a cup of water on my head. I comb it. And I go to work that way. But I get up at 3:20, out the door before 4, trying to be at work by 4 or shortly after. Gives you an hour to go through all the local stuff. And then the afternoon before, I always did a lot of other prep, just looking for lighthearted things or whatever.
Yeah. That prep, I mean, you kind of run the gamut. You talk about, you know, you riff on news with whoever's doing the news that morning. So you have to be kind of up on current events. You got some recurring guests like Beer Dave,
right.
One of my favorite guests, by the way.
He's a lot of fun too.
Well, I think that's valuable information to know, like, you know, what's going
it's
on.
It's important.
I agree. And because I listen to that, I know that you hate IPAs.
Yes.
which leads me to.
Well, I hated IPAs before it was cool to hate IPAs.
Yes, yes.
I mean, years ago, probably in the 90s, I did commercials for this group called Beer Across America. Craft beer wasn't big yet, but if you subscribed basically to this service, I think every 2 weeks they sent you a 12-pack or something of different beers from around the country.
Yeah.
And it was always half IPAs. But at least I was doing the commercials, so I wasn't paying for them. So that was a plus. But, I mean, what's with these IPAs? And I've never had one that I liked. So when Paul Dehner Jr. married my daughter, Megan, I said, let's keep this simple. At Christmas, you give me a six-pack, I'll give you a six-pack, put a bow on it.
Call it
make
good.
Make it easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was fine with that. So we did. Well,
I need to come up with that arrangement with my father-in-law. That's brilliant.
Yeah, just keep it easy.
Yeah.
So this Christmas, he shows up with a six-pack of IPAs. I didn't say anything. I thought, is this a joke or something? But he seemed serious about it. So then I started wondering, has he ever listened to this show? So the next time I had Beer Dave on, I said, Dave, I think I found someone who's never listened to this program. My son-in-law, Paul Dehner Jr.
That was a fun moment when you revealed that. And then you didn't let it go. You know, you're at the end of this poignant moment. You got family around, friends, former colleagues, and you're ribbing on your son-in-law because he's never listened to the show.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, proves, you know, in some cities, you have the Kevin Bacon rule, 6 degrees of separation.
Right.
Smaller towns, it might get down to 2 or 3. In Cincinnati, I think we're actually like -2 degrees of separation with people, because your son-in-law, Paul Dehner Jr., a former Enquirer colleague of mine, who also launched this podcast, what, do you remember, Phil? Probably 5 years ago now. He was the founding host of the That's So Cincinnati podcast before he left us to go to The Athletic.
I think I remember him doing it.
So between you and me, we have Paul as our connection.
Right.
And that's pretty typical in Cincinnati.
Yeah. And you said Sherry left for the prosecutor's office?
Yes, yes.
My daughter's an assistant prosecutor. So we got that connection.
There we go. It's just very weird in Cincinnati. You cannot burn bridges. You cannot... Don't be talking behind people's back, because somebody's going to tell them what you said.
It will come back in a hurry.
It will come back in a hurry. Well, let's talk about that last week. Like, I mean, even now, has it sunk in? You've been doing this for 50 years.
Yeah.
Has it sunk in? Like, what have I done?
I'm fine with it. You know,
you look relaxed, Mike. You look like the weight of the world is off your shoulders.
I am relaxed.
And your hair is combed, so you had time to shower before you came down.
Took a shower the whole thing.
Yeah.
But the last week was difficult because I just started hearing from so many people. And you assume when you're, you know, over that period of time, you've impacted a life here, a life there, something like that. But I was just getting inundated with people with, you know, stories of difficult times in their life where either something I said or a topic I covered or whatever changed their outlook or changed people. I don't know how many times people said changed my life in an email. I was getting emotional because I can't keep reading these things.
Yeah.
So I was really surprised by that. Really surprised from all over, you know, people. When I did the weekend show syndicated for about 5 years, which I liked, I enjoyed doing, but I quit it to go to Chicago. But a lot of people who listened to that then started listening to me during the week, even though they were nowhere around here. They could be in Idaho. They could be anywhere.
The magic of internet radio.
Right. So I'm hearing from all those people too, you know, that you never knew of, you know, who knows who's listening right now in Fort Lauderdale, you know, to that show. So I was really taken aback by it and moved by it.
It was moving just hearing, you know, you had some people calling in. Everybody that called in was in denial about you leaving, even, you know, recurring people like Jennifer Ketchmark. I guess she was in the studio, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That had to be like standing room only, it sounded like.
It was. We had a good crowd in there.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody else could squeeze in, they'd make it a point to squeeze in. But
yeah.
And the door was open, so anybody in the hallway could listen, chime in or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Eddie was in there, it sounded like. And people that normally I think you have, you know, via phone where they're live. And
yeah. And Dave Armbruster, he and I go way back. He was probably the first person to run the show when I started in 86 or whenever it was.
And for those who don't recognize the name, if we say Yid,
yeah,
then they will
the same
know.
Guy. Yeah. 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 And he's been producing Reds and Bengals for 35 years, maybe 35 years. So he's a busy guy, but yeah. And he's been a good friend over the years too. So yeah, it was friends and family and, you know, workmates. And it was a great send-off. I mean, I've thought ahead of time, I don't want to get emotional. And if I have a bunch of clowns in here, it'll be a lot tougher to get emotional.
That's right.
So I liked having the room full of people.
Right.
It was easier that way.
Yeah. Now, I have to ask you this. Did you pick the song that they played as you signed off for the final time? Or do you even know what it was?
I wasn't paying attention to it.
Because you were probably not even hearing it if a producer just sort of dropped it in there.
I might have heard it.
It was Never Say Goodbye by Bon Jovi.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, which I thought Mike certainly did not pick up because that's very cheesy.
that would have been Danny, producer Danny Gleason would have pulled that up.
It was touching, but I thought to myself, there's no way Mike picked that. And then I was also wondering if you were going to craft some final words of wisdom, but you didn't. You just said, you know what?
I said, no pearls of wisdom on the way out the door.
Wisdom.
Just hope to see you around town.
Peace out.
Yeah.
There's nothing left to say.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to choke up.
Oh, okay.
You know, if you try to get serious. Then,
right.
Then I walked out and everybody who works there had two lines of people high-fiving me. And like, I just got through 4 hours in the air without choking up and you pull this. I mean, it would have been a lot easier if people weren't so nice.
Right.
You know, it was great that they were, but
it
made it tough.
Yeah. Well, there's nobody that I can find that will say anything bad about you, which I think is rare in radio too. I mean, I think radio draws different types of personalities, but it's not uncommon for, you know, someone who is, especially in talk and you're provocative, but you've managed to do it in a respectful, which I think is more rare and rare each day in a respectful way.
Yeah. I mean, there are some diehard Trump people out there that don't like me. You hear from them on a regular basis. But, I mean, I don't care. I think Trump's making the same mistake that Biden did. He listened to too many people on his far left, and Trump listens to too many people on his far right. So they're birds of a feather in that way.
Well, you've managed to kind of not knowing, never asking you what your politics are. You've kind of seem pragmatic and maybe a touch libertarian.
Yeah. Yeah, I do have libertarian, and I have voted libertarian for president in the past, you know, People say you're wasting your vote.
It's a protest vote, Mike. Yeah.
I know. So you're saying I should vote for someone I don't want to be the president. Is that what you're saying? Because I don't want him or him
right.
or her or whatever to
was
be
there,
the president.
Was there pressure on you as the industry in general, AM Talk, moved hard to the right? You know?
The answer is no. I made this at some an interview I did, but I can tell you I went there, went to work there, whatever, for 35 years, and no one ever told you what to say, ever. I mean, you go in. Now, if there's something special the station's doing, we got to cover this, or, you know, that kind of a thing. But as far as content, no one has ever told me what to say or do. They trust you coming in the door to know what you're going to do, and then they let you do it, and you go home. And fortunately, the overwhelming amount of time, we win. That's as rewarding as it gets. But no, there's never been any push on anybody that I know of. I mean, if somebody's brand new to it, somebody might work with them coming up with topics and how to put things together. But once they're in there, excuse me, once you're in there for a while, no, they leave you alone. I mean, to be honest, right here in Cincinnati, there's no one in management above us locally who's done talk. So they have to trust you to know what you're, know what you're doing. So
get out of my way.
Yeah.
That's great. All right. Well, again, I want to thank you for coming in. Like I said, your first day of retirement, and we've got you back behind a microphone.
Yeah.
Probably not what you were expecting. It's a sunny day, a little brisk, but you could be golfing. What is your ideal day in the life of Mike look like now?
Preferably sunny.
Well, you might need to relocate
again. The past few days were miserable. But I will get out on the golf course fairly often. And I'm going to take it more seriously this year in that I will take lessons, which I sporadically do. And then you just don't for 5 years or whatever.
I think I've heard you say that that's cheating, though.
Practicing is cheating.
Oh, practicing is cheating. You just need to walk up cold, grip it, and rip it, right?
That's it. Well, I might cheat this year.
Okay.
I have some targets I want
to
meet.
Go to the driving range a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I do a little chipping, this and that. Actually, I play pretty regularly with Paul Daner Sr.
Okay.
And he's quite good.
All right.
Now, if I get on a stretch where I have a really good day and he has a really bad one, I might be able to beat him.
Okay. Well, so, you've got more time now to like to hone your game.
Yeah. So that and travel. Travel is I love to travel. And for a long time, I mean, we've wanted to go to Australia, New Zealand, but you can't take 3 weeks off. You can't go there for less than 3 weeks.
Right. Yeah.
And
it takes like a week just to get there.
Yeah.
Not really, but it seems like it.
Well, with the jet lag, it plays a role. So that's on the, I'll say, immediate agenda, but we haven't looked into booking anything yet. So, but we're going to do that. It's our first big trip. And then a place in Canada, I've been going for years. We can spend more time than we used to. Maybe spend a month. Spend a month up there. River cruises in Europe. You know, I like to get around.
Yeah.
Favorite place ever, Machu Picchu in Peru. If you're looking for something out of the ordinary,
that's on our list.
That is stunning when you get there.
Okay.
It's Machu Picchu.
That might be for our list. My wife and I both like to travel. I like going back to places I've been to that I like because you know it and whatever. She wants to cross things off. She doesn't want to ever do something twice. So now we're getting to the point where we got to find something like that might be the one. That might be the one that I could get excited about. That
it's also an easy trip. You don't think of it, but Peru's in the same time zone as us. So there's no jet lag at all.
There you go.
Straight south.
All right. So. Well, we normally wrap this podcast up with a That's So Cincinnati moment, but I think we've done that. I think last week, the passing of the torch from Mike McConnell to Tom Brenneman was a Cincinnati moment that a lot of people shared.
Yeah.
You know, our readers were interested in that. There were, we were working all our sources, by the way, to find out who your replacement was going to be, at least get it confirmed. You know, lots of rumors out there. Your friend Willie was fanning the flame of the rumor mill. Yeah.
Like it was going to be him or something.
So, yeah. Or, you know, but if if you didn't listen to it, obviously you can, I think you can probably still get it from the iHeart website. You can download the podcast or the shows, and just listen to that last hour. That was full of Cincinnati moments. You know, it was, I was stuck listening to it. I couldn't turn it off. Like, I canceled a meeting because I wanted to make sure I heard, in case you were dropping pearls of wisdom, I wanted to hear what those were.
But, well, that's nice to hear. Some people have told me they took the day off, listeners. I took the day.
To hear. No, it's a big deal. Like I said, you know, you're probably aware of it now because so many people have told you. And I'm sure when people walk up to you that you've never met, they feel like they've known you their whole lives.
Certainly.
Because you've been a part of their life, you know, in their car, in their headphones, at the gym or whatever. It was a Cincinnati moment. So congratulations, Mike.
Thanks.
Officially.
You also have those people out there.
Is it good riddance?
Mike, we played in that outing in 1992. Oh, yeah, you.
You have no idea.
No, get a lot of that.
Yeah.
Apparently I played golf with a lot of people that I don't remember, but. I'm sure it was memorable at the time.
At the time. And there was no beer drinking involved either.
No,
sure.
That wouldn't have happened.
That would not have happened. Well, again, congratulations. Thanks for air quote co-hosting today.
Yep. My pleasure.
Like, you know, like I've told our listeners, with Sherry's departure, we're going to have a rotating list of co-hosts till we settle on a permanent one. And when I was thinking, who am I going to bring in to co-host today? I'm like, we don't need a co-host. We have the host.
Yes.
We have, you know, Cincinnati's probably most well-known, highly regarded radio host there is in our studio today. So you got the job, man. You got the gig today.
We got upset when I said make it Mike and Burrow. You want a top billing.
You know, let's talk to our agents. Let's let them work that out.
My people and your people.
That's right. They'll get together. Again, Mike, thank you and congrats on your retirement.
Thanks very much. Had a good time.